live from the Poly Market Studio in L.A. It's the Young Turks. Welcome to the Young Turks, Jake Huger and Experian with you guys. It's a lovely Monday. Let's screw it up by doing the news. I'm playing. All right, we got news for you guys. But you look, do I have to bother telling you it's good news and bad news? without further ado, let's get to it. Legendary Annika Sparrow.
All right, well, I wanted to start off with an update to a story that we shared with you all last week, and it had to do with elder abuse by police in Colorado. So, we're learning more about the Colorado cops who are currently facing a lawsuit over the brutal arrest of a 73-year-old woman by the name of Karen Garner. Her family is suing the police department in Loveland over the fact that she has dementia, and they were incredibly excessive in their force when they were arresting her. This is the woman who walked out of a Walmart with a little under $14 worth of merchandise that she had forgotten to pay for because she's elderly and has dementia, and she was met with brutality by the cops. Now, the two officers have been identified as Austin Hopp and Daria Jalali of the Loveland Police Department. They arrested 73-year-old Garner on June 26th of 2020 after she left a Walmart with $13 worth of goods that she hadn't paid for. Garner's family says she forgot because of her condition. Now, I give you that context because after we played that horrendous video of her being arrested, we now have video of them in the police department essentially reviewing the body cam footage of her arrest, and they're making light of it. So I'm going to show you the first clip, which basically features them watching that footage, reacting to it, and pay close attention to how they make light of the same video that we all saw that was incredibly difficult to watch. Take a look. They talk about how much they love watching body cam footage, even when it's incredibly brutal body cam footage. That video that we talked about last Monday was so difficult to watch. It personally put me in a bad mood for the rest of the day. It was just incredibly difficult. But when they're referring to, did you hear the pop? They're talking about dislocating the 73-year-old's shoulder as they're putting handcuffs on her. So they're very aware of the physical harm that they caused to a frail 73-year-old with dementia. But before I go back to the old video to show you and remind you of what that scene looked like, Cenk, I wanted to get your thoughts.
Yeah, so two things there. One, Jalali, the female officer, looks much more uncomfortable than the male officer does, and she will more and more as that video goes further. And she bothers to check in on the 73-year-old. The guy seems completely unconcerned. He seems to be enjoying it. And in fact, I wanted to just make that point. When we covered it the first time around, Anna was really tough on the male officer there, Hobb.
Yeah.
And I said, look, it seems like it's training 101. They teach our cops to be brutal, and then they are. And that's still very much true. But now, having watched his reaction afterwards and the zeal he had and the violence that he committed against that woman, I now think it's definitely both. They got bad training, as they do in almost every police department in the country. They're taught over the top brutality. But on top of that, that guy seems to particularly enjoy it. I can't believe he rewatched it and was laughing throughout, mm-hmm. when it was just one of the more horrific things we've seen.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not letting Jalali off, because while she did certainly feel uncomfortable watching the body cam footage, you know, earlier in the video, and we're going to show you examples of it, the culture within that police department makes it very clear that she's not really allowed to speak out against it, and she doesn't. There was an opportunity for her to do so, and she refused to do so. I should note, though, she's one of the rookie cops, so it gives you a sense of what the culture is like. But before we get to that, I just want to remind you all of how vicious these officers were in arresting her. And it is a difficult video to watch. Like I said, it put me in a bad mood for a full day. I want to give you that warning. But this is what they were making light of.
I'm not going anywhere.
Why are you fighting with me? Why are you trying to slip the cuffs off?
I'm going home.
Stop.
I'm going home.
No, you're not. Are you finished? Are you finished? We don't play this game. You understand me? And if you try to kick me, oh, this is gonna be bad.
I'm going home.
Stop.
I'm going home. I'm going home. I'm going
Grit.
Home. Out here.
Are you finished?
I'm going home.
You.
Just go to the ground. On the ground. On the ground. Why are you doing this? Let's see who she is.
I'm going home. I'm going home.
Yeah, I know. I'm just trying to search her real quick.
Oh, I don't know.
No, we should wrestle for a minute.
So reports indicate, by the way, that she offered, once the Walmart staff approached her about the unpaid items that she was walking out with, she realized she had forgotten and offered to pay, and the staff said, no, that's all right, and they called the cops anyway. And this is how the cops treated her. They didn't ask any questions. In fact, in another video that we'll show you shortly, they were very clear about the fact that she was senile. Like, they referred to her as senile. Okay, yeah. Meaning that they knew that she wasn't completely aware of what was going on. And that's an important part of the story.
So when he first starts roughing her up in the original video, you think maybe he doesn't know. But she repeated, I'm going home, in a way that clearly showed that she didn't have her full mental faculties. She repeated, I don't know, dozens and dozens of times. And so by the end, you felt, if you weren't already queasy at them throwing her on the ground and popping her shoulder and doing all those things, by the end it was so obvious that she had some sort of dementia that you felt totally sick to your stomach over this. They go back to the office, rewatch the tape and laugh.
Yep.
If we're teaching our cops to be this brutal and inhumane, of course all these horrible, horrible things are gonna happen nonstop. You know that they kept her in a jail cell without getting her medical treatment for a shoulder that they knew they popped. You just saw it on video, them watching, ha ha, look at it pop. They kept her in there for 6 hours without medical treatment. It's just,
yeah.
And look at the culture. If you did that here, people would be like, are you insane? Are you laughing at a woman, 73-year-old woman's shoulder getting popped, and you did that? That we'd all be horrified, right? I imagine where you work or where you live, if you watched it, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be a doctor's office. It could be a plumber's office. I hope you'd be horrified. The only place it seems that people enjoy it at a police office, you know, at a police station. So there's something wrong in our policing. If you can't see that, you're trying super hard not to see it.
So let's get to the next clip, because in this next clip, you're about to see exactly what Cenk just described, and it's even more difficult to watch it after hearing it. He weighs about 100 pounds, so he's super proud of himself. Like, he talks about how excited he was to get the handcuffs out, to rough her up like that. I mean, it's incredible, because he really feels like a hero there, like a real tough guy.
Yeah, well, look, guys, we give them guns and badges, and then we tell them that if anyone disrespects them for a nanosecond, that's their license to be as brutal as humanly possible to them. And just please, if you're defending the police in this country, don't bother. Don't tell me, oh no, they don't teach them to be brutal. Oh no, they don't teach them that they need to escalate violence as soon as someone disagrees or doesn't follow orders for a nanosecond. We've seen it a billion times. Everybody knows it. Even if you're a right winger, you know it and you revel in it, right? But the reality, until they do it to you, by the way. And then you go, wait, I thought it was just for black people and old people and stuff. You're doing it to me, poor people, you're doing it to me. Yeah, we taught them, if anyone disagrees with you for a second or asks you or questions you or doesn't follow an order, legal or illegal, sensible or not sensible, it doesn't matter. Smash them to pieces and then come home and laugh about it, right? So when you give anyone that kind of power, please read it as a Stanford prison experiment. When you give anyone that kind of power, they will abuse it. It's obvious. But no, we're not going to fix any policing anywhere in the country. A great comment by one of our viewers I wanted to share with you guys. Someone who likes Bernie Sanders, that's the handle for our viewer, tyt.com/join to become a member. We do the show together with our members. They make great comments like this one. They wrote in, side note, apparently they have access to body cam footage the same day. Remember all those times when the cops say they can't release body cam footage for months after an event? Such a great point. Oh no, we can't seem to find it in our files. Right. Oh, when you want to have a good laugh over mauling a 73-year-old woman, you find it the minute you come back into the office.
So this next clip is important in talking about how body camera footage is manipulated, is oftentimes turned off when cops engage in some sort of violent encounter. And so the video begins with Hop asking Jalali, the woman, if she had turned her body camera off during the arrest. And then pay attention to the back and forth, because it does go to show you what the culture is, at least within that department, but we've seen something similar across the country.
How do you think that works?
What? Well, that would be crazy.
You do?
Did you know? Apparently you did not.
No, I did.
I thought
we were expecting a good question. But every time I
try to jump in, like, I got pushed
off to the side, so
I don't
want you to think that I'm not acting. I didn't think
you were, but you read it there the whole day. Did I push you off to the side? I'm very sorry. I didn't think that. There's a lot of stress in it. Yeah, it's okay. Okay. I know,
you
didn't
think I was not.
You're definitely lying. You're a lot of help. She's just very flexible and very. When I had a mixed bar when Chris got there, and I was like, I'm gonna play. I was pushing, pushing, pushing her. I was like, no.
That's what you said to me.
Yeah.
No doubt I saw the car. There's more than just that guy.
Yeah.
What they're referring to toward the end there is the bystander who saw the whole violent encounter go down and wanted to know the details about the department so he could file a report. So that's what she was talking about there. And you know, it begins with her asking, do you think that went well? Because she has a feeling that it didn't go well because they brutalized a 73-year-old woman. Referring to her as flexible is fascinating because, you know, 73-year-old women, 73-year-old individuals are really known for their flexibility, you know?
Yeah. So look, throughout she looks uncomfortable for whatever it's worth. But I actually think that video we just watched is amazing because it shows you live action how culture forms.
Yes.
So she's uncomfortable with it, but he says, oh no, it went fantastic. We look pretty, right? And in another part of the video, which is an hour long of them watching it back at the office, she's covering her head a lot, going, I hate it, I hate it. He's going, I love it, I love it. And if you notice in that last video we showed you, she then turns around and asks him, like, was I in the fight enough, basically? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So she goes from like being uncomfortable at how they mauled the woman to, wait, did I kick her ass enough? Am I gonna get approval from you? Because she's a more junior officer, right? And so that's how you get approval among other cops.
Yeah.
Did you kick ass enough, right? Did you assault innocent people enough?
And he responds with, you were definitely fighting. Verbatim, those were his words. It's a 73-year-old woman who's suffering from dementia. You were definitely fighting. What? Like, how is that the standard in responding to a woman who forgot to pay for less than $14 worth of merchandise at Walmart? How is that? Like, he genuinely thinks that he handled this really well, really well. One more video for you all, because this one really did make it clear to me that at least Jalali knew that there was gonna be a problem once this story got out. Take a look.
That dude yelling at me like I couldn't budge. I didn't want to do that anyway, but I didn't. I'm
walking in. I'm like, hey, you know what? Oh, me? I'm
still fighting. I thought you were done.
No.
We closed the door and you were still there. I was like, what? Like,
we didn't close the door.
I closed my door. We had her in the car.
You closed your door, but she still wasn't in on my side.
What? Oh, I told her. I'm sorry to abandon you.
It's okay. That's why I called for another unit. I was like, hello.
Start jumping in. Oh no, I'm sorry. Is that believable?
Because you didn't, your boss say we'll talk later.
No.
I thought you heard.
No, he said, let me know when you're ready for the ask later.
On scene, didn't you say we'll talk about it later?
Oh, well, regardless, Lucy or not, I use force of life.
When she says I calmed him down, she's referring to the witness who saw the elderly woman get roughed up. So she's like, you know, I calmed him down, hoping that nothing would get reported. And then clearly she's concerned about the higher ups punishing her or punishing them for the way that they handled the situation, which clearly Hop is not worried about that because oftentimes they don't suffer any consequences for it. In this case, you have the family of the 73-year-old woman filing a lawsuit against them, which is how we've gotten access to this type of video.
So he's on administrative leave, she's at desk duty. I'm sure they're all getting paid, it doesn't matter, it's like a vacation. And look, as in the longer video, the two male cops are having the time of their lives watching the how one of them, Hob, attacked a woman, assaulted the woman, right? But even when they get concerned here, when the other male cop is gone and it's just the two of them that handle the incident, at no point, to be fair to Jalali, she went and checked on the woman at some point in that hour, okay? Hob didn't care, etc., right? But at no point during that, even when they got concerned about, hey, are we gonna get in trouble? Did they think, hey, maybe we should get our medical treatment? We've now talked about how I popped her shoulder twice, mm-hmm. and nope, 6 hours, no medical treatment. Look, it's for any rational, sentient human being, it's super obvious that we teach police abuse as a regular course, as standard operating procedure. And just go to any police training. Are they not listening to your orders? Go over the top, go over the top immediately. You have to show them who's boss, crush them. Come on, you know it, you all know it. So yes, the racial component of this is a giant part because black people are attacked, assaulted, and killed by cops at a disproportionate rate. But I think just as big a problem is the overall training and how they treat all citizens except the rich. They're told, be really careful with rich people. But other than that, go nuts, get crushed them. And that is not what we should be training our police. Look, last thing on this, European countries have 1 to 2 police shootings relatively, like on average. Now there's some variation obviously there. So per year, you know how many we have? 1,000. No, not police shootings. 1,000 deaths from police shootings. That means cops shoot and kill 3 people a day, every day in America.
They're protecting and serving, Cenk.
Yeah.
They're protecting and serving.
No, they're killing 1,000 Americans every year. And that's because we told them to. And I gave you the European stat. Why? Because they don't have out of control crime in Europe. They don't have out of control crime in other places where they don't teach their cops to be fascist and brutal and over the top and vicious. We have out of control police here that are taught to be fascist, and then we're surprised. You shouldn't be surprised. You taught them to do that, you told them to do that, and that's what they do everywhere across the country.
When we come back from the break, Derek Chauvin might be facing additional charges by the Department of Justice over kneeling on a black person's neck, a different black person's neck, for 17 minutes straight. Don't miss the details to that story and more when we come back.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Back on the Young Turks, quick shout out to 2 regulars on Twitch. Obi Mom Kenobi gifted 5 subs, been with us 13 months. That's as old as it gets, I think, on Twitch, at tier 3 at that. And said, Obi Mom Kenobi 7 says, thank you for being a beacon of sanity in this insane world. You are very much appreciated. Much love, TYT. Hashtag too strong together. We appreciate it. And AJ Duenas, as always, gifted 5 subs. AJ, we really appreciate that too. YouTube Super Chat, that Bernie bro writes in, that's what our country is about, property over people, even if it's just $14. By the way, even if it's just $14, he didn't even steal. And YT Prenewed says the Stanford Prison experiment was discredited. More on that in our member section in a second. I don't think that's really true, but I'll explain in a second. But new YouTube members, Malcolm X. So that's it. Malcolm X resurrected and now a Young Turk. Or perhaps they just took that YouTube handle. And that's a pretty badass handle. Thank you for being a Young Turks member. Appreciate it. Vipalati, Cutler08, and John Lynch all just joined by hitting the join button below. Every member makes a giant difference. We try to bring sanity and change to the country together. Let me go to perpendicular time in our member section on our website. Talking more about the Stanford Prison Experiment, saying it specifically attracted people who wanted to abuse power and were encouraged to abuse power by the psychologists running it. Most people do not behave that way. I hear you on the problems with that experiment. I don't agree with you that most people don't behave that way. If you took average set of folks and put them as prisoners and guards, I would be shocked if they didn't normally act that way. I would be shocked. You give people power and they abuse it with almost predictable regularity. That's human nature. So anyway, but they say policing is, I want to continue about their point. Policing is about violence to keep a community in line. The violence attracts those who want to abuse the power they will have. The culture encourages the violence and reproduces it in younger cops. Abolish the police. It is not a way for any normal community institution should behave. So now there's a lot more complexity in addressing that. So in terms of abolishing the police, that is a very difficult endeavor in America. But the reason I keep saying retraining is we have to fix the culture. But no politician is actually having a real conversation about that. Because the minute you tell police, do not use overwhelming violence immediately, they'll say, that's it, you're endangering our lives. Their hair will be on fire. And then politicians get scared and run for the hills. Tommy Too Strong wrote in, Anna and Nando were discussing Kubrick's movie in a post game. The film they didn't mention was A Clockwork Orange, where the cops were the ones who were abusing the elderly and helpless and rejoicing in it afterwards. Mm-hmm. That is what we are becoming. Unfortunately, that's very true. I mean, our cops and our culture is becoming like Clockwork Orange, which was a nightmare movie. We've got to get better. We've got to change immediately. All right, we'll be back. TYT, Cenk and Anna with you guys. Anna's got more.
We're learning more about Derek Chauvin and his past with policing in cases aside from George Floyd. So the Justice Department is considering pursuing additional charges against Derek Chauvin for kneeling on the neck of a black individual. This is a different case from the one that he just found, was just found guilty of murder, and that's the George Floyd case. In this case, we're talking about a teenage boy who, yes, is black, who he knelt on the neck of back in 2017 for 17 minutes. The Root reports that the Department of Justice is considering the possibility of charging the ex-Minneapolis cop in connection to this 2017 incident where he allegedly knelt on a black teenager for a whopping 17 minutes. Prosecutors were apparently presented with multiple videos of this case, of this incident, and they showed it to the judge in the George Floyd trial, but the defense unfortunately succeeded in arguing that any type of brutality that Derek Chauvin might have engaged in any other interaction other than with George Floyd should not be presented as evidence in the case. So they weren't able to use that in the case, but now we're learning about it. And apparently the video is so brutal, so awful, that the DOJ is thinking about pursuing additional criminal charges against him in the federal criminal case.
So I wanted to quickly say, the judge did not allow Chauvin's past to go into the trial. All, remember, he had 18 complaints against him before George Floyd. None of that got in. The guy was a serial abuser. And on the other hand, they allowed George Floyd's past to come in, including criminal charges. Mm-hmm. So the person who died, the victim, got smeared in the trial, but Chauvin was protected in the trial. He still got convicted, thank God. But that's why sometimes cops get let off, because our system goes, oh no, the beloved cherished cops, don't tell people about how they maul people on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. But oh, if they murdered a black guy, tell him what a dangerous criminal he is. He might have smoked pot once. So there's many things wrong with the system, and that's one of them. But of course, the main point here is, if they had just done something about Chauvin back when he attacked that poor kid viciously, George Floyd would be alive today. But they never do anything to hold cops accountable. He didn't get tried. Nothing happened to Chauvin. Nothing happened in 18 of the times he abused people, including this horrific story we're going to tell you more about.
Exactly. So let me give you context for what happened. And also let me be clear that we do not have any footage of this encounter, but we do have descriptions of what this encounter was like and how it went down. So it all started when a woman had called the cops on her teenage son. There was some sort of domestic dispute, and Derek Chauvin, along with one other cop, showed up to the scene and demanded that the teenage boy get down to the ground. When the boy refused to do so, Chauvin immediately became violent, according to accounts of what's in the video within the encounter. Within seconds, Chauvin hit the teenager with his flashlight, grabbed the teenager's throat, hit him again with the flashlight, and then applied a neck restraint, causing the child to lose consciousness and go to the ground. Chauvin, and this is according to the state prosecutor who clearly has seen the video, Chauvin and the other officer placed the teenager in the prone position and handcuffed him behind his back while the teenager's mother pleaded with them not to kill her son and told her son to stop resisting. About 8 minutes in, Chauvin moved his knee to the teenager's upper back and left it there for 9 more minutes. To give you a sense of just how vicious he was with this teenager. And so this is something, again, that was presented to the judge. The judge said that this is not admissible in the case with George Floyd. And so as we're learning more, I'm happy to know that the Justice Department is at least considering using this as a reason to add charges in the, again, criminal lawsuit on a federal level in regard to Derek Chauvin and his policing.
The most important part of the story is, why did Chauvin do something so brutal? It was so brutal that only 33% of Trump supporters thought he was innocent. That's how bad it was, okay? Now that's a giant number, and it's way higher than the rest of us. But still, he lost even a majority of Trump supporters with how brutal he acted. So why did he do that? Because he had done it apparently many times before, and there was no accountability. It's not. The cops, the rest of the cops, if he was such a bad apple, and his bosses never said, oh my God, that's outrageous. You're fired, you're suspended, you're this, you're that. No, they just said, oh, bravo, nice job, way to bring the guy in, way to crush that guy. Now they pretend to be outraged. Don't pretend. You let him do that over and over again. You probably very, very, very likely encouraged them to do that.
Yeah.
And so now we know he did it for 17 minutes and you didn't even fire him. And so you probably didn't even come close to firing him. I don't know if you gave him a medal or whatever. So that entire department, especially his bosses, are 100% guilty. If I was his boss and I heard what he did in that incident, I would of course fire him. But that's why I wouldn't be in policing in America. Because if you're not the most brutal person you've ever met, you don't get to be a cop in America. And so now look, more on this. The mom calls and says, the son and daughter are threatening me, so she needs help. So look, in the beginning when the cops show up, you have sympathy for the cops because they're in a tough situation, right? But they lose the sympathy instantly because instead of asking questions, what's going on? Can we separate you guys? Is everything okay? First thing Chauvin goes to is takes a flashlight,
yeah,
hits him over the head.
Twice.
And he got, of course, he starts bleeding. He needed to be taken to the hospital. He got stitches. Later, as he's kneeling on him, the kid starts bleeding from the ear. The mom who called the cops, then is, as Anna read to you, she's pleading, please don't kill my son. Now, do you understand why black people are afraid to call the cops?
Yes. So, okay, let's stop there. I have so many things to say. Remind me about Maxine Waters, because I want to make a point about her statements prior to us learning about what the verdict was in the Derek Chauvin trial. But this is the disconnect that I think many people have a difficult time understanding. And of course, I'm specifically referring to people who do not believe that there's a problem with policing in this country. If I call the cops, if I personally call the cops, I know that it is very likely that they are gonna help me out with whatever it is. I know that they're not going to in any way threaten my life. I know that this is actually a public service for people like me. But it is not the case for many people in this country who are of a certain socioeconomic status and of course of a certain race. That's the reason why some people in this country do believe in the notion of defunding the police and redirecting those resources, our resources, the resources that we as a community put into the police department, redirecting that money toward social workers, toward people who actually have formal training in mental health. So, for instance, in Loveland, Colorado, when Walmart employees make a big deal out of an elderly woman with dementia forgetting to pay less than $14 worth of merchandise, right? You don't call cops who are gonna brutalize her. You'll have resources readily available to bring someone onto the scene who knows how to deal with someone who might be suffering from dementia, for instance. So that kind of thinking makes sense. It's just that people have to sit down and actually think about it in a nuanced way rather than immediately jump to hyperbolic conclusions about what people are asking for. There is a divide, there is a disconnect, because oftentimes people only see situations from their own lived experience and perspective. And just because the cops have been great to you doesn't mean that's true of how cops operate in other communities.
Yeah, our viewers actually had a lot of great points to make that are similar to what you're saying. Let me go to Squirrel Squad first. So these are from our member section. In Germany, 269 people died due to policing between 1990 and 2017. If Germany would be the size of America, that'd be about 1,000 dead people in 28 years. We have 1,000.
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your active ID more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
Dead people from police shootings and killings every year. 28-to-1 ratio. And Germany is actually nowhere near the best in Europe in this category. So a normal middle of the road European country, we're 28 times worse on cop killings, people, cops killing citizens. Is there out of control crime in Germany? Not at all. You don't have to do policing the way that we do it. We choose to do it because from our perspective, the police are supposed to be right wing and crazed and never allowed to be disrespected. And they will, I mean, look, if imagine any other profession works that way. Oh, you're a doctor. Oh, you disrespected me. You didn't agree with him. Boom, he slaps you across the face. People are like, what the hell are you doing, right? But we let cops do it all the time and they get celebrated. Oh, you slapped him across the face. Oh, great job, way to be. Oh, you didn't kill him, next time, right? And Jess says, my dad was a high school history teacher before he took up a job as a corrections officer. My dad was a very different person before and after he became a corrections officer, and not for the better. So please do not tell me that the system does not change people. We train them to be this vicious. Normal human beings are not this vicious. And okay. Then finally, Derek Murphy says, Derek Chauvin is just another symptom of this corrupt and at times overtly racist policing system. One more thing for me, the sleeper hold that he did on that young kid, that is extremely dangerous. That it cuts off oxygen to your brain and it could cause brain damage. Willy nilly does it, nobody cares, nobody holds him accountable, and later he cuts off oxygen in somebody else's brain and they die.
By the way, we read members' comments. So if you want to get your comment read on the show, become a member. You can click on that join button if you're watching on YouTube, or you can go to tyt.com/join.
Maxine Waters.
Yes, so I wanted to make one point about Maxine Waters. You and I got into a debate about whether or not Maxine Waters should have commented on the trial the way she did prior to the verdict. And I said that she should not have done that. This is exactly why I believe she should not have done that, right? Because remember, the defense asked for a mistrial as a result of a US Congresswoman weighing in on the trial before a verdict had been reached. And the judge luckily said, no, I will not consider this a mistrial, but was clearly angered by what Maxine Waters had to say and then suggested, you know, maybe you can bring it up upon appeal. The fact that the judge was presented with that video of a teenager being brutalized by Derek Chauvin in the same way, actually, depending on what the video actually contains and what we know from the description, possibly worse than what he did to George Floyd that day. The fact that the judge saw that and was like, no, it's irrelevant to the case. It's irrelevant to the case. I'm not allowing that. Like, the system is so biased against justice. And that's why, it's not that I disagreed with what Maxine Waters had to say. It's just that they'll look for anything to let Derek Chauvin off. And that's why I was honestly terrified that it would be successfully used against justice in this case. So far it has not, but the defense has tried.
Let me say one last thing on this. Remember all the Fox News hosts, including Tucker Carlson, who said after the trial, oh, basically he only got convicted because the country was afraid of black people rioting.
Yeah.
Okay, they look at the stuff that Chauvin does and they think, that's our boy, attaboy. The only reason to get convicted is because black people are so violent. He sees the violence of the murder, and now he'll see this story and he'll probably think, attaboy. Now it's public. Now that it's public, they're gonna have to do something about it. When we were having such a great time abusing black people behind the scenes, and meanwhile blaming them for it by claiming that it was their violence we're concerned about. So that's the right wing in America, and that's partly what's led to this policing.
When we come back from the break, we're going to move away from police brutality related news and talk a little bit about what's happening in the federal government when it comes to acknowledging important things like genocides. We'll come back with that and more when we return.
All right, guys, you were just seeing that graphic. We're gonna do a Biden's address to the joint session of Congress. That's coming up this Wednesday. It's me, John, and JR who are gonna do it. It's at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Make sure you check that out. First 100 days, everybody's analyzing it. We're gonna analyze it for you guys. We'll have a different take. I talked to a reporter recently, and she was shocked to find out that some people weren't in love, some progressives were not in love with Joe Biden. So, well, here we are. It's complicated. I was just on British television earlier today too, talking about it. There were some good things. There were definitely some negative things, and almost nobody in the press, to be fair to the press, almost none of the progressive legislators complain about the terrible things like him purposely killing the $15 minimum wage. Anyway, obviously we're not going to fall into that trap. Now back to our member section. No more trigonometry writes in. Two of my biggest fears are being the victims of a mass shooting or getting killed by a police officer. These two fears are pretty much exclusive to growing up and living in America. It's true. If you lived almost anywhere else, that would never even cross your mind. Mass shootings are incredibly rare in the rest of the world, let alone getting killed by cops. That's also incredibly rare. All right, new members on YouTube, Maurice Watson and Andre Anderson. Are they American heroes? I guess. So Andre and Maurice, thank you so much. Hit the join button below to join up or to get elevated membership. Today we're going to talk about happiness in the postgame, lighten things up completely. That's just for the members. So tyt.com/join or that join button below. Or by the way, if you want to find out if you have Amazon Prime, how you can do it for free, please don't stop your subscriptions if you have them somewhere else. But it is free for you if you have Amazon Prime on Twitch. That would be a great add-on, and we'd really appreciate it. It takes about 30 seconds of your life. tyt.com/prime to learn how to do that. It's super simple, okay? And now, there it is. It's a video, it explains it. So easy. It's so easy, okay? Even I could do it. Okay, now I'm gonna go to YouTube Super Chat. Dragon Soldier says, as a 20-year Army vet, if I did any of these things that cops do, even to combatants, I would have been locked up for years. But maybe Trump would have pardoned me. But that's right. We've actually had a number of people come on the show who were both cops and military, and they were veterans. And they said, oh, military policing is infinitely better. We take much more care not to hurt people. And the training doesn't promote over the top violence. But when we got trained as police officers, it did. So that's just reality. Dragon Soldier had another comment. Let's not forget Senator Klobuchar is a county attorney. No, I think she was he said country attorney, but I think she was a state attorney. Anyway, attorney general, and I believe in Minnesota. Could have prevented George Floyd's death, but here she is on Meet the Press congratulating the verdict. She's trashed like so many of the rest. That's his opinion. And that Bernie bro says, God forbid the Walton family with a net worth of $151 billion lose out on 14 bucks. We'll be right back. Back on TYT, Jing and Anna with you guys. I want to do a quick shout out to our Twitch community, who I love so much. Depressed Progressive, as usual, gave 1,000 bits, and Link2764 gave 1,100 bits. Guys, those make a huge difference. Everything does. I love doing this show with you guys. Avenger Dragon said, thanks to Obi-Mom Kenobi7 for my sub gift. The fact that you guys give each other gifts and subscriptions, it's just great to see. That's exactly how a progressive community should be. And of course, Consume Tofu said, I like turtles.
Okay.
All right, back to you, Anna.
All right, well, we've got some news on Biden doing something that other presidents have refused to do. Joe Biden is now the first US president to acknowledge the Armenian genocide, which has, of course, increased US tensions with Turkey. We'll get to that in just a second. But he has put out a formal announcement. This happened on April 24th, which is the day that the genocide is commemorated. It's also the day that Armenians across the country usually engage in demonstrations in order to pressure the US government to finally acknowledge the genocide as a genocide. Now, in Biden's statement, he said, quote, each year on this day, we remember the lives of all those who died in the Ottoman era Armenian genocide and recommit ourselves to preventing such an atrocity from ever again occurring. And we remember that, so we remain ever vigilant against the corrosive influence of hate in all its forms. Now, he says each year we remember, but the fact of the matter is, No, the US government doesn't remember it each year. Previous US presidents have literally campaigned on acknowledging the Armenian genocide, and then as soon as they win the election, they immediately back away from doing so. And it doesn't matter if we're talking about Democrats or Republicans. Obama campaigned on it and didn't follow through. Trump campaigned on it, clearly didn't follow through, even though many Armenians in the US are Trump supporters. The Trump administration pushed back on the congressional attempt to recognize the mass killings as a genocide in 2019. Even when legislation passed overwhelmingly with huge bipartisan support, the State Department declared that it didn't reflect the official position of the administration. So this is the same pattern that we've seen with previous presidents. Biden had also campaigned on this, and to be quite honest with you, I wasn't holding my breath, and I'm genuinely surprised, but pleasantly surprised that he did this. Now, we should discuss why he did this in a minute, but Cenk, initial thoughts.
Yeah, so American presidents have been lying about this for decades. Almost every one of them says they're gonna do it, and then everyone until now had not done it. So you've got to ask why, right? So the difference is politics, electoral politics versus governing politics. So electoral politics, there's more Armenians in America than Turks. So every candidate, Republican or Democrat, is going to want to lean towards the Armenian community. Now, by the way, that doesn't make it right or wrong, okay? I'm just explaining the politics. I'll talk about the policy in a second, okay? But when they get into office, they realize, Turkey's in a very central geographic region. We really need them in to check Russia, and then really need them in Syria, Iraq, oftentimes Lebanon, Israel, Ukraine, and it goes Iran. And so there's in such a strategic location that the governments thought that U.S. governments thought they needed to be appeased. So that's why you see this constant. Well, you call it whatever you like, flip-flops or lying about what they were gonna do. Now, so why did Biden choose politically to do it now? Number one, they learned the lesson from the Obama administration. Former Obama officials, including Ben Rhodes and Susan Powers, basically, and Rhodes, I think, had this exact comment, better do it in the first year because it gets harder every single year. Every year there's a new controversy in the Middle East and Russia, et cetera. Oh my God, Turkey's too important. We don't want to anger them now. So it gets harder and harder to do as you go along. If you're going to do it, just pull the Band-Aid off, okay? So that was one lesson learned in the Obama administration. The second reason, more important reason, is because Turkey at this point is historically weak strategically in the region. That's because Erdogan has tanked the economy and he's alienated almost every ally in the region. So there is no better time from America's perspective to declare this than now. What is Erdogan gonna do? If he overreacts, he endangers the Turkish economy even more. And he recently, his party lost elections in Istanbul, and that's got them really worried. Istanbul is by far the largest city in Turkey. And if you lose power in Istanbul, you might lose power in the whole country. And so, if Biden didn't do it this year, they were never going to do it.
Right.
This is the best time to do it, and they did. I'll get to the policy in a second, but.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you're absolutely right. And you mentioning that Turkey was seen as a check on Russia is an important point, because in recent years, Turkey and Russia have engaged in far more diplomatic ties. For instance, Turkey did buy weaponry from Russia, and that infuriated the Trump administration. But that's just a little taste of the growing tensions between the United States and Turkey, because there are growing tensions as a result of Erdogan and his chaotic leadership. So you're right about all of that. The CNN video also touches on other potential factors into Biden's decision making here. And I want you to listen to it, and then we'll kind of unpack it.
Why did Joe Biden go there when so many other presidents have not? Multiple reasons, as I said. Probably number one, this was a campaign promise for Joe Biden, but also he has been trying to reestablish the United States as a leader on the issue of human rights around the world. And then there's the personal relationship. The president did get on the phone with Turkish President Erdogan on Friday to tell him that this was going to happen. This was described to CNN's Kevin Laptak as more or less a tense call. I also have to say, Joe Biden has been a critic of President Erdogan for some time. He's referred to him as an autocrat and even suggested, Fred, that the United States should back an opponent politically of Erdogan in Turkey.
In fact, the messaging coming from the State Department in response to Turkey has been pretty critical. For instance, Secretary of State Anthony Blinken in his confirmation hearing referred to Turkey as a strategic, so-called strategic partner of ours while criticizing its drift toward Russia. Turkey and Russia have occasionally found their interests aligned when it comes to American influence. The Trump administration also sanctioned Turkey last year over its purchase of a Russian missile defense system. In the beginning of the video, we showed you the desire to really reassert the United States as a leader on human rights is BS. Everyone needs to stop repeating that nonsense. There's nothing about, this is not about morality. This is not about doing the ethical or right thing. On the international stage, especially when the United States is involved, but every country, geopolitical issues always have to do with self-interest, and that's what this is about. The United States has a bad relationship with Erdogan right now, and that's the reason why this decision was made. This was the right decision. I'm not trying to take away from that, but there's a very obvious and real reason why this happened. It has nothing to do with human rights. If anything, maybe the Biden administration wants to be able to continue talking about China engaging in genocide against Uyghur Muslims. And in order to do that, they think they need to acknowledge the Armenian genocide. This provides some cover for that. But it's all self-interested stuff. It has nothing to do with human rights, which is why this issue had not been acknowledged formally until now.
Yeah, so there's other complexities too. Turkey's not towing the line on Iran, how dangerous they are and how we need to invade. Turkey used to have a great relationship with Israel. Now they have a very poor relationship with Israel. The Russian arms purchases didn't help anybody. All these things are factors. Trump should have recognized the Armenian genocide, and all of his fans thought he was going to, and how he was going to be tough and strong. He did the exact opposite. Not only did he not recognize it, he gave Erdogan a giant gift when he withdrew from northern Syria. And that was just personal corruption. It appears that he has significant financial interests in Turkey, and Erdogan just had to make a call. And Trump was like, yeah, sure. I don't care about Armenian people, Syrian people. I don't care. Kurdish. I don't care about any of them. Well, where's the money? Okay. So now, hence, give Biden a lot of credit for doing the principal thing, even if it's for geopolitical and strategic reasons.
Yes.
Okay. Now, just a quick note on the policy. Look, the Turkish government has no leg to stand on. They say, this insults our Turkishness. Who cares? That's not a thing. It's criminal in Turkey, but it's absurd. And saying that there's the country, in this case, it's not the Republic of Turkey. It was the old Ottoman Empire, right? Did something wrong doesn't mean every person is guilty. And that's a thing that a healthy country does to get better. So just like here in America, when we criticize American government, it doesn't mean we hate America. It means we want America to get better. It's not insulting Americanness. Mm-hmm. And then the Armenians say that 1.5 million people died. Historians generally agree with them. The Turkish government says, no, we only killed 300,000 people. How is that any better? Like, that's like going to a trial on assault and saying, and this literally happened to a friend of mine where the other guy said, no, Your Honor, I didn't hit him in the face. I hit him in the stomach. That's assault either way. And this is genocide either way. So just in case you're unclear, genocide definition is a crime of acting to, quote, destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group. So was this an ethnic group that was targeted at the time? Of course, they didn't target Norwegians, or they target Armenians, right? And was it in whole or in part? Of course. Srebrenica was considered a genocide by the United Nations. Only 8,000 people died. Now, look, I say only 8,000 people dying is awful. And they were targeted in that case because they were Muslims. And so, and I want you to know this context too. Two last things. At the same time, yes, Anna's right. It is different pronunciations, but it's actually my last name, Uyghur, right? The Uyghur Muslims in China, Biden said, what the Chinese government is doing to those Uyghur Muslims is also a genocide. Okay, so he's not trying to insult the Chineseness of China. He's saying, don't do that to Uyghur Muslims, mm-hmm. right? And that is a genocide. And so they are being fair in how they are applying it. Now, I'm Turkish American, so I have plenty of Turkish friends here that and back at home in Turkey that object to this, of course, right? Because of their Turkish pride, etc., right? And so, one, I just told you all the reasons why it doesn't make sense. But two, they say, oh, they're targeting us because we're Turkish and they want to spread these things about Turks and Muslims. First, I love you guys, but don't flatter yourself, okay?
Yeah, no one's in America thinking about like, oh, what can we do to damage the reputations of Turks in Turkey? Like,
I got news for you.
We got our own problems.
In America, for better or for worse, no one cares about Turks. Like, only from your Turkish perspective do you think, oh, they're obsessed with taking us down a notch. They're not obsessed with you at all. They never think about you, except for situations like this.
Yeah.
But more importantly, they say, oh, but they're gonna teach all the children to hate Turks. Okay, I get it, that's a concern, right? But guys, we also teach them about the Holocaust, and that's Germans, and we teach them about the Rape of Nanking, and that's the Japanese. We're not telling them to hate Germans or Japanese people. Is it a coincidence that that happens, the Germans, Japanese, and the Turks were their main opponents of America in World War I and World War II? Likely not a coincidence. There have been dozens, if not hundreds, of genocides in the world. We have focused on those for good reasons, but also for geopolitical reasons, etc., right?
Yeah.
And America should be honest with itself too. We should recognize the genocide of the Native Americans. And I arguably, based on this definition, what we did to Africans that we brought here, now African Americans, was that a genocide? Of course! Beatings, lynchings, rape, murder, you name it. So let's all, Americans, Turks, everyone, be honest about what has happened in the past so that we do not repeat it and we move forward. And let's not target any particular people, but let's be honest about everybody and all the crimes of the past so that, again, we can get better.
So I got to end the story with Erdogan's reaction, because it does actually illustrate a cultural disconnect between Turks and Americans. Because he put this statement out there thinking like, oh yeah, well then I'm gonna call you guys out and you guys are gonna hate it. But most Americans read this and they're like, yep, you're right. He said this: if you say genocide, then you need to look at yourselves in the mirror and make an evaluation. The Native Americans, I don't even need to mention them. What happened is clear. While all these truths are out there, you cannot pin the genocide accusation on the Turkish people. So the last part of that statement is ridiculous. The first part of that statement is accurate. Yes, the settlers, the European settlers in the United States committed a genocide of the Native Americans. That is true, and I'm glad that he brought that up. And I'm not offended by it. I don't see that as the Turkish government trying to destroy the reputations of the American people. I think the American government does a pretty fine job of that in the current moment with our involvement in Yemen right now.
Yeah.
And so that doesn't make me insecure about my identity, my heritage, my anything. I think that it makes you strong and courageous to be able to own up to your past mistakes and want to do better moving forward.
Yeah, look, I'll add Leslie. If you're targeting Turks in general, that's obviously not healthy, and it could be argued to be racist. If you're talking about this particular crime and genocide, yes, it happened. It clearly happened. And so they moved them, there was massacres. I can go on and on and on, right? And for Turks, they don't get it. They think like, oh, we are being personally targeted and we're the only people being targeted. Does it make you feel any better if I say, yes, the Mongols committed genocide in Baghdad when they came into the largest city in the world at the time and massacred every man, woman, and child? That was 800,000 people that they killed. Yes, that was a genocide. Yes, what happened to the Native Americans was a genocide. It doesn't make it any better. This is not a ha-ha thing. Oh, it's because you're thinking about it the wrong way. There's nothing wrong with accepting what you did wrong in the past, learning from it and getting better. That's not a bad thing, that's a good thing.
Exactly. That does it for hour one. When we come back for hour two, we will lighten it up a little bit by talking about people who like to fearmonger about burgers, because that's what conservatives have been reduced to in the United States. We have that and more when we return. See you for hour two.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.